From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist from Los Angeles, and this is a show where we ask the question, we make the statement that we all know that the truth will set you free. The question is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? And each week we deal with mental health issues from a holistic perspective. That means body, mind, and spirit, and try and deal with issues that all of us can relate to or that maybe we can learn from if there are issues that we don't personally have a connection to. The importance is increasing our level of compassion and understanding of our fellow men and women so that there's a bit more peace going on within us as well as within our communities. Now, this is a live call-in show, and if you're local in the Phoenix area, the local number is 480-874-1311, 874-1311. If you're listening via the internet, which I know some of you are out there, the toll-free number if you want to ask a question or make a comment is 1-888-437-7660. That's 1-888-437-7660. Last week, if you listened, I did part one of a two-parter on women with HIV and AIDS, and my guest last week was Beverly London. And in spite of the technical problems we had, it actually was a very powerful show, and it was great getting a couple of emails from people about it. Tonight, we're continuing this discussion with another guest who I'll be introducing in a little bit. Her name is Pam Yelsky. And I want to talk about women and the issue of HIV and AIDS in the context of the fact that this is a group that is very rarely talked about or written about, and the consciousness of the risk factors that women entail and the numbers of women that are HIV positive or diagnosed with AIDS is a lot higher than you might think. Now, I'm going to read a summation of a key story. This was the number 5 HIV or AIDS related story from 1992. And I'm quoting actually from the newsletter for the Pacific Center for Counseling, which is part of AIDS Project Los Angeles. And what they said in this story from 1992, quote, "It will no longer be necessary by 1993 to even rank this as an issue or a stride, since the world has rapidly accepted that this epidemic is a major one for women as well as for men. Studies released this year help corroborate that survival with HIV disease is not really different in women than it is in men, but the formerly perceived difference may have been because women present later in the course of the disease. In other words, it takes them longer to show symptoms. Just in case there were any left who were in doubt, the World Health Organization released this past summer the rather sobering statistic that a majority of new HIV infections acquired worldwide in 1992 have been in women. The majority of new infections 13 years ago. Locally and nationally, all reports point towards increasing percentage of HIV-infected and PWAs being women." Now, realize that that is 1992. Now, July 29th, 2003, front page of the Los Angeles Times on major headline, right next to, unfortunately, the death of Bob Hope, who we acknowledge today. is the headline, AIDS Cases Again on Rise. U.S. increase is the first in a decade. HIV cases also rose last year. The CDC calls it a disturbing sign that efforts to fight the disease have stalled. And this article goes on to say, and I quote, "For the first time in a decade, the number of new AIDS cases in the U.S. has increased, an unsettling sign that efforts to combat the deadly disease have stalled," the National Centers for Disease Control and Prevention report Monday. Later it says, "The most disturbing trend was a 7.1% increase in new HIV infections among homosexual and bisexual men." Later it goes on to say, "New HIV infections among intravenous drug users and heterosexuals showed small but noticeable increases as well, according to the CDC." Edwin Baird, executive director of the UCLA AIDS Institute, said the increases in HIV and AIDS were a sign of a dangerous sense of complacency, partly due to the successes of AIDS therapy. A lot of people feel that they don't have to worry about being exposed to HIV because they feel that they just have to take a pill and they'll be fine. We're going to find out later that it's not just about taking a pill. But the point that I'm making is, in this whole article, the only thing that was stated practically about anything other than gay and bisexual men was that one sentence about drug users and heterosexuals showed small but noticeable increases as well. Here we are in 2003, 13 years after the CDC reported that half the cases of HIV infection were in women, and the focus of the article doesn't talk about minorities, which is also one of the largest groups being affected today, heterosexual as well as gay and bisexual, doesn't talk about adolescents, which are highly at risk, and doesn't talk about the fact that women are showing larger and larger numbers worldwide and in this country. We're still stuck in the stigma, and myself as a gay man, I'm certainly grateful that this is being shaken out and maybe brought to greater consciousness amongst other gay and bisexual men, but I really feel strongly about the fact that it's serving a great disservice to all the other people that are at risk, people who may not even realize they're at risk. The same way Beverly last week had no idea her husband was bisexual when she got infected. And people are complacent. Gay or straight, people are complacent today. They're tired of hearing about it, and they still have their head in the sand in so many ways that this is still a problem, that getting HIV is not just about taking a pill. So you can tell I'm a bit passionate about this, and when I read this article today in the LA Times, I thought how timely and what a great introduction to the second part of my show on women and HIV and AIDS. And I'm so grateful that my guest tonight is somebody that I've known since, I think, 1991. She's an incredible woman and a very inspiring woman and a very courageous woman. And her name is Pam Yelsky, and she is diagnosed with AIDS. And I'm going to have her tell a little bit more about her own background. But, Pam, I want to welcome you to the show tonight and just tell you how grateful I am that you're doing your first radio show with me and on Tell the Truth Faster. Welcome.
Thank you, Stuart. Thank you. I'm happy to be doing it.
Thank you.
I'm not even nervous because, yes, I have known you since January of 92.
That's how long. So it's actually the same year that story about HIV in women came out. So how timely that is, too. What was your reaction to what I'm saying today about, you know, here 13 years ago or 11 years ago, they're saying how many women are being infected, and an article comes out on the first page of the LA Times and hardly even mentions the consciousness that women and minorities are at risk.
Well, let me just say that normally I have low blood pressure, and as you were telling me about it, my blood pressure was rising, and as I was listening to you read it, because it's simply not true. I can tell you for a fact that women are in they're ever increasing. The numbers, the statistics are that 48% of new infections are women. And
worldwide? Mm-hmm.
Worldwide, approximately 48% or 17.5 million of the 37 million adults living with HIV or AIDS are women. And you mentioned a lot of new infections in young people and in the Latino community and the women of color. It's very scary that that's not being addressed and that the focus is still on gay and bisexual men. It's frightening to me in the year 2003 because it's what I do is to try to be an activist and to try to speak out and to try to educate people that this is not about gay or straight or bisexual or you know how anyone has sex or what they do in the privacy of their own home. It's about this disease that does not discriminate against gay or straight or women or men, or it affects everybody, and it makes me angry that the Los Angeles Times would print something like that. And it's really misinformation.
Yep.
It's not complete information.
The information that I put in it was accurate, but it's incomplete.
It's incomplete.
And just not really serving the community to slant it in the direction they did.
Right. Well, I can tell you that teenage girls now represent more than half, actually 54% of new AIDS cases among those aged 13 to 19.
Half?
54%. And young African Americans represent 64% of new AIDS cases among 13 to 19-year-olds, and Latinos represent 20% in this age group.
Wow.
I'm looking at stats from the CDC.
Well,
this is as of July 2002.
It's astounding, and it's astounding how little it's talked about. And it's one of the reasons, like I said, I really felt it was time to really focus and you know, 2 hours of my show on this is even just scratching the surface. But I'd like you to talk a little bit about, I mean, you're not a minority in terms of Latino or African American or Asian. You're a white middle class woman who is diagnosed with AIDS.
Correct.
Tell us a little bit more about you. I know we're going to be going to break in a little bit, but start introducing yourself and let the listeners know a little bit about your story.
Okay.
Before we get in deeper about what women in general are experiencing.
I'd be glad to do that. Well, let me first say that I would never have been diagnosed if I didn't ask for the test myself. In spite of the fact that I was quite ill in April of 1988 and in and out of a major Valley hospital for 3 weeks, I was misdiagnosed with lupus first and then leukemia. I was having high spiking fevers, night sweats, vomiting, diarrhea, very, very sick. And ultimately they said, well, it's not lupus, it's not leukemia, but you have Epstein-Barr virus. Just take better care of yourself, get more rest, and nothing life-threatening. And sent me on my way in April of 1988. And what I later learned in January of 1992 when I asked for an HIV test, my husband and I were going to get pregnant, and actually, I was going to get pregnant. He was going to help me.
But you'd been married to Jerry for how long?
I had been married to Jerry
at that point,
a year and a half. We met actually in August of '88, right after I had this bout of being ill, and 2 years later we were married. And
you've been having safe sex.
We've been having.
You
well, probably to be honest, the first 3 months of the relationship, we were having safe sex.
Mm-hmm.
After that, we were not having safe sex. But 3 years of unprotected sex,
mm-hmm,
during our relationship and the first part of our marriage.
Okay.
The reason what made me get tested is my stepson, my husband's son, is also HIV positive. He contracted the transfusion at birth in February of 1982 from a blood transfusion.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband had been giving him growth hormone injections from the time that he was 4 years old, and there were times when I would see his hand shake and there would be blood, and I thought, well, this is just the responsible thing to do for us to both get tested. And never really thinking that either one of us was going to come back positive, just something to be done, and my OBGYN did the test. I ended up being his first patient to test positive, and he didn't know how to tell me that. So it took an extra couple of days to get my test results back because he didn't know what to do. So it was not just an HIV diagnosis at that time, it was an AIDS diagnosis. I had 92 T cells and was immediately sent to an HIV specialist at a major Los Angeles hospital for treatment.
Because all those symptoms that they thought were other things
that
were actually HIV-related symptoms
exactly.
that were progressing.
I was I had zero converted, and they were able to trace back really to when I was infected based on the number of T cells that I had and having all those symptoms and then really having a lot of classic symptoms for women over the course of the last 10 years. And I was infected in 1981.
How do you know from where?
I was in a relationship living with and engaged to a gentleman who turned out to be bisexual and did not tell me, just didn't come home one night and disclosed later that he had been with a man trying to make sure that that part of his life was over.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that the timing was perfect, and I really kind of had a lot of problems after that, whereas I didn't before. Female problems, yeast, chronic recurrent yeast infections, lots of female trouble. In 1984, I had an exploratory surgery because I had so many female problems. Sinus infections that didn't respond to regular antibiotic medication, and lumps in my throat, swollen glands that I was told I had carotid artery syndrome, had cortisone shots injected by one doctor directly into my neck. All of the symptoms were there in the early 80s, mid-80s, and definitely in the late 80s that we were able to trace it to this particular relationship in 1981. So I've actually been living...
So again, another situation where a woman's at risk but doesn't know she's at risk.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And in April of 88, they did not test me. With all the blood work I had done at this hospital, I said, "Did you test me for HIV?" And the doctor looked at me and said, "Absolutely not. You're not in a high-risk group. You never did IV drugs. You're not a promiscuous woman. There's no reason to test you for HIV. It's not HIV."
Mm-hmm.
Now, today, I believe that was just God wasn't ready for me to know then. Mm-hmm. Who knows what I would have done with that information in April of 88. I just wasn't ready.
Right. So I want to thank you for being as open and honest about that part of your journey. And we're going to take a short break here. When we come back, we're going to go a little deeper into your experience and how it's relevant to what we're trying to get to in raising women's consciousness.
Okay.
So stay tuned. This is Stuart Altshuler and Tell the Truth Fast. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. Tonight's topic is women and HIV and AIDS, and this is the second of a two-parter. If you listened last week, my guest was Beverly London, who's a woman with HIV and AIDS. And this week, my guest is Pam Yelsky. And Pam was just describing her journey and how she was surprised with this diagnosis about 10 years ago. And Pam, what you just described was a woman who's in a relationship, in a marriage with a man whose son at birth was infected through some surgery, through a transfusion, who they didn't expect to live till he was 6 years old and who's now in college, which surprised a lot of people, but I know your stepson, so I can understand that. But now, all of a sudden, you have a family situation where your husband is dealing with his son, now is hearing this about his wife. I mean, how did this impact your relationship with Jerry and the family situation, and how did you cope with this emotionally? How did you get through it?
Well, let me just say that my husband is a soldier, and he's definitely a person I would have wanted to have in the landing craft, as Tom Hanks said in Saving Private Ryan. When you landed on the beach, my immediate reaction was, "Oh my God, I can't give him a child. We can't have a child together. My womanhood is gone. How will we deal with this? And how is it fair to him to really ask him to stay in a marriage where he has a partner now who also has AIDS in addition to his son?" having AIDS.
So the damaged goods syndrome, nobody's going to want me, nobody's going
to
love me.
Oh, honey, it kicked in immediately,
yeah.
And I gave him permission to leave, or that I would leave immediately. And he just looked at me in typical Jerry style and said, "What are you talking about? I'm in this for the long haul." And I said, "In sickness and in health, and we're going to get through this." And God bless him. You know, if it wasn't for Jerry, I would have never gone to the hayride.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one who went to the Bodai Tree bookstore and brought me home the flyer and brought me home books and tapes about Louise Hay and subliminal tapes to listen to about AIDS, and got me to that hayride right after my diagnosis. And
wow.
If you remember, it was the first night that I went looking to meet Louise Hay was the first night that you took over as facilitator, and I wanted to leave. And it was Eileen Rankel, our little guardian angel, who's no longer with us, who convinced me to stay in that room. And of course, I've never left since. But were it not for Jerry, he was leading the horse to water and basically forcing me to drink, you know, because I figured I was going to be dead within a year or two.
Right.
I really did. I had no information, in spite of the fact that my stepson had an AIDS diagnosis and I'd been with my husband for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
We really weren't as educated as we should have been, because we kept being told, well, you've got him, he's 6 years old, what a gift, he won't make it till eight. And when he was eight, it was, well, gosh, he's lived this long, you know, maybe he'll be 9 or 10, but we're really not sure. And he was very sickly and had a lot of hospitalizations and a lot of problems, and he was very small. And in those days, it was just AZT, 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 and some other, I can't even tell you what the other drugs were back then, but we were taking basically the same thing. And how overwhelming for my husband. But he's been a soldier for the last 12, 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who he is. And that's how he will describe himself, is he's a soldier.
Mm-hmm.
He puts on his gear every day and goes out and he fights the disease with us.
Mm-hmm.
And you can say that he doesn't know what it's like to live with it, because he doesn't have it in his body, but he does know what it's like to live with it.
Yeah.
He's lived with the both of us through some pretty dire times and been there to motivate both of us and to keep our spirits up and to know that no matter what happens to either one of us, he's not going anywhere.
And he's had to deal with his own emotions and everything else along the way. So it's not, you know, I mean, I know you're speaking metaphorically that he's a soldier, because he's actually an attorney.
but we won't hold that against him.
No, but he really, you know, it's like he's in the trenches along with you and Bo.
He is in the trenches.
Know?
He is.
And so,
he doesn't always take care of himself, and we know that too, but
yeah.
He's been much better in the last 6 months. Kind of he was forced to, because our health, the health of my son and myself, was not good at the same time we got slammed as a family starting in February, and his head, his chin, the water was over his head, the weight was over his head, emotionally, spiritually, mentally, and physically, dealing with both of us being sick at the same time. You know, in the last 12 years, we've been lucky enough that we weren't both down at the same time. And this particular period has been a rough one, and Jerry had to cry uncle and ask for help.
Okay. Now, I want to get to the part in this article, because it's a common misconception today with these protease inhibitors and the cocktails and everything else, that dealing with disease is nothing more than like taking an aspirin if you have a headache.
Yeah.
Pop a pill. And I mean, I've been supporting people for 20 years in this epidemic, and you know, I've seen what you've gone through, and I know that it's a lot more than that. What are you experiencing in terms of treatment now in order to wake people up to realize that it's not that simple? Even though less people are dying today, the medications are still not the most pleasant thing in the world for a lot of people.
Well, you know, Stuart, I don't know if there's enough time left in your show, in this particular segment or in the show to touch on that, but I can tell you that 1 month ago today I started a new regimen, and I was off medication for 2 solid months, and what it took to get this new medication was amazing. I'm one of only 15,000 people worldwide, 7,000 people nationally, that qualified for this T20 Fusion, which is an injectable medication. And it's twice a day, Let me tell you, it's not any day at the beach. It took in 43 years of a fear of needles and having to inject myself twice a day in my belly or my thighs, which I don't have a whole lot of meat in either place, is no picnic, and it's not something to be taken lightly. And it's not that I just do these injectable medications. I also take five other oral medications that have a litany of side effects. You know, some days I'm strapped to my toilet, and I don't need to say anything else with that. There's neuropathy involved in hands and feet, and there's swelling and bloating and sleeplessness. In the last 30 days, I've slept 5.5 hours a night, with the exception of 3 nights where I was lucky enough to get 7, and that's with a sleeping pill.
Why do you go on?
Because there's still a lot of life to be lived, and a lot of work to be done, and a lot of education to be done, and I'm stubborn. And I've got a 21-year-old amazing son who is not supposed to be here, who I'm hoping to one day see grandchildren from him.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a wonderful husband and a wonderful circle of friends, and there's just a lot of education to be done. I don't want to see this happen to anyone else. There's a lot of talking for me to do, a lot of speaking out, and if I can prevent even one person from having to live the way I'm living my life every day, basically around medication 4 times a day, and planning my whole life around medication and the side effects that it can cause, then that's still my job to do.
Okay, we're going to take another short break here. So this is Stuart Altshuler, my guest tonight, Pam Yelsky, talking about women and HIV and AIDS. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with Tell the Truth Faster.
The rainbow.
Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler, and tonight's topic is women with HIV and AIDS. It's the second part of a two-part. And my guest tonight is Pam Yelsky, who's been telling quite an inspirational and quite a moving story. Pam, I'm really appreciating your candor and honesty, and I know that it's part of your commitment to actually reach out to other people to make them more conscious. And one of the things we've been talking about is how you've had some friends, you had your husband standing right by you, and a lot of people, particularly women, would think, Like Beverly talked last week, and I know you didn't get a chance to hear it, how her husband demanded secrecy about this, and she couldn't even tell her children, and he died, and even on his deathbed, they didn't, you know, a lot of people didn't know what he was dying from, and she felt so alone and so isolated. And I know that's the fear of most people, gay or straight, men or women, but when you're dealing with women who really feel that we're, am I going to turn to? This is about gay men, and all the agencies are about gay men. In addition to your husband and getting to the hayride, I know that you came across another group called Women at Risk. How long did it take you to find a support system of women and for women? And what kind of difference has that made for you?
Well, I did not actually find Women at Risk, although it's been in existence since 1991. It was founded by two HIV-positive women, just as you said, out of their frustration that there were no services available specifically for women. Because it's a South Bay organization, I did not discover it until I moved to the South Bay in the summer of 1994. But again, my husband saw a little advertisement in the local newspaper, and I went to one of the support groups immediately, within a month after moving to the area, and was totally blown away by the fact that there were other women living with this disease. Because if you remember, I was kind of the mascot of the hayride for a couple of years.
For a lot of time, other than Suzanne, do you remember Suzanne?
I remember Suzanne.
Other than Suzanne, there were very few women with HIV coming. There were a lot of women coming as a support to friends, like Eileen and so many others, but there were very few women themselves with HIV or AIDS coming to the group, yes.
Correct. So, well, it was wonderful. The hayride was wonderful, and these guys were my family. They didn't know what it was like to be a woman and a mother and a nurturer and to live with the disease in a woman's body, and it is significantly different. So from the first time I went to the first meeting, which the only other person in the group other than the facilitator that first night was one of the co-founders of the organization, Annie Copeland, and it was like looking in a mirror. I was totally taken in by her and by the concept of the organization. And by the second meeting that I went to, there were three additional women there. And to sit in a room and look at women who looked like me, who they were working, they had families and children who they were taking care of, and spouses or significant others, and they had the same symptoms or side effects from the medication that I was having, the same lack of libido that I was having. Who the heck wants to have sex? This is what got us into this in the first place. The feelings of shame and stigma and things that were attached to it. Some of them were there with using fake names. They hadn't disclosed to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me feel very grateful that I didn't have to do that. And as you know, Stuart, I'll tell anybody anything at any time, and that's what really has helped me to survive, because I don't have a problem telling anybody that I'm HIV positive, that I have an AIDS diagnosis, and if they have a problem with it, then I don't need them in my life anyway.
Exactly.
Because I'm not going to contribute to the stigma and the shame. I refuse to participate in that.
Well, that's telling the truth faster. That's about seeing how much more alive and vibrant you could be when you're not withholding and living in shame and secrecy.
Well, there's nothing to be ashamed of. Why should this disease be any different than cancer?
Mm-hmm.
Why should it be treated any differently than that? But this group of women was so it was so empowering to look at these women and to know that there are women out there who are living, wanting to live with the disease and not to just give up and shrivel up and die, and to be able to sit and talk about all these things and laugh about some of it and laugh about the fact that we all look like some twisted version of some twisted Barbie doll with our humps on the back of our necks from the protease inhibitors and our bloated abdomens and our little flat boobies and our thick legs and little skinny arms. And we had a term that one of the girls in our group came up with called eggs on legs, and that's really kind of what we all look like, and no butts. But we could laugh about. It was a place that we could laugh about or cry about how this disease has affected our bodies, the disease itself and the drugs,
mm-hmm.
because they affect us as women differently than they affect men, because our body fat content is different. We're just different.
Mm-hmm.
So we're taking the same powerful medications that a 250-pound male is taking. Of course, it's going to affect our bodies differently.
And that's not to say, I want to really clarify something here. It's not to say that, I mean, you're still a very physically beautiful, vibrant woman, and I know sometimes you don't feel like it, but you still look like it. So when you talk, I mean, people are getting images of hunchbacks with Notre Dame and people, you know, it's like, that's not what you look like. You know, there is sometimes something noticeable at different times, but not like the Hunchback of Notre Dame here or anything like
well,
that.
Well, let me just tell you, my greatest asset used to be my butt and my legs, and I don't have either one anymore. So that's what I'm saying. You know, we see ourselves differently than other people.
I know. But most people looking at you would go, there's a beautiful woman there.
Oh, very sweet of you.
Okay.
You say all the right things.
I mean it. But go ahead. Continue what you're saying about women at risk, though.
Well, this organization, I became involved, as I said, as soon as I moved down here, and immediately became involved as a volunteer. And I've been going into our little hovel of an office basically every Thursday for the last 1994, for the last 9 years, other than times when I've been sick. And been involved as a volunteer. I'm currently the president of the board of directors. I have been going on 4 years. And I'm quite active in all the fundraising events and things that go on within the organization. And I'm grateful to be involved because they've given me so much, and they continue to give me so much and to be there for me on so many levels. The organization is small and grassroots. I mean, we're growing every day, but the nature of Women at Risk is that we do not solicit or accept government funding, so what we offer to women is total confidentiality and anonymity. You can come in and say your name is Jane Doe and still get the support and the services that you need and want. We don't care to know really who you are if you don't want to tell us. But you can still go sit in a support group with other women and get supported. You can get transportation to that support group. You can have another positive woman take you to a doctor's appointment if you're in fear about a particular appointment. We do hospital visits. We do one-on-one peer counseling, where if a woman doesn't feel that she's ready to go into a support group, then she can just come into the office and sit down one-on-one with another HIV-positive woman and share her experience and get feedback from the woman who's been in, walked in her shoes and can maybe offer her some comfort. We do our own fundraising. You've been to the Gospel Brunch. You know what that's like. It's a huge event. We do once a year. We've done five so far. We have an unbelievable honorary angel board that supports us in that, including Brian Cranston, Laura Dern, Shelley Long, Eric McCormick, Kelly and Kiefer Sutherland, Lily Tomlin, and Ben Affleck, who is just a doll. He came to the event last year. 2 years in a row, he did public service announcements about the event for us, and just to kind of share with you a little encapsulated version, if we have time, of really what women at risk is after this public service announcement that he did this year before the event, we ended up getting a call from a woman who had an HIV-positive friend who had just moved to the Los Angeles area from Hawaii and had no access to any support or services. She heard Ben's talking about the event and the organization. We were able to, because someone donated money to sponsor an HIV-positive woman who wouldn't otherwise be able to attend, we were able to give her a sponsor ticket to the event where she met our staff, met other positive women, and then the following week, she came physically into our office. She met one-on-one with another positive woman. We referred her to a local HIV specialist over at UCLA because she needed immediate health care, got her in for an appointment right away. And we were also able to refer to some other state AIDS service organizations for some individual counseling. And we were also able to give her some emergency money. We do get small grants that are allocated for emergency funds, and we were able to, she literally came here penniless, and we were able to provide her with some monies to help her with her first month's, you know, rent and expenses. So that's kind of encapsulated what Women at Risk does.
That is just incredible. And we're going to take another short break while this sinks into everybody. And we'll be right back with Tell the Truth Faster and my guest Pam Yelsky. This is Stuart Altshuler. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is our final segment tonight. My guest has been Pam Yelsky. We're talking about women and HIV and AIDS. And Pam, talk a little bit more about your experience with Women at Risk, and we have a few minutes for you to kind of share whatever other final thoughts you'd like to give.
Okay.
And how people can get in touch with you or Women at Risk.
Okay, great. Thank you, Stuart. I'll do that first. First of all, you can check out our website at www.womenatrisk.org. You can view clips from the House of Blues and also a public service announcement that we were lucky enough to have donated last year. And you can contact me at our email address, which is connect and the little at sign, womenatrisk.org. And the at in Women at Risk is spelled out. So again, connect, the little at sign, womenatrisk.org is the email address. And I'd be more than happy to respond to any emails that are received there.
And I also want to add that if they didn't get a chance to write that down, they can also get to you through my website for the show, tellthetruthfaster.com. any emails that you send me that you want to get to Pam, I'll make sure that they get forwarded to her.
Terrific. Thank you, Stuart. Well, I guess in closing, I just would want to share the most recent personal experience that I had with Women at Risk, and that is that since February, we've, as I said before, we've been kind of slammed with several different health issues. My son was in ICU for 5 days with internal bleeding, and during that time, I was already bedridden with bruised ribs from a fall, bronchitis and sinusitis. So my family over at Women at Risk, they came and got me every day that he was in the hospital, and they drove me there. They stayed with me. They made sure that I ate and then brought me home on the evenings that my husband just left earlier than the mother and me would allow me to leave. They also made food for me and my family during that period of time and took me to my ongoing medical appointments and made sure that I got there and kept them. And then most recently, they just supported me physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually when I ultimately ended up in the slammer, as I call it, for 11 days during the end of April and the beginning of May. And they listened to me bitch and whine and complain and laugh and cry without any judgment. I felt like I was in rehab for 11 days. I just ran the gamut of emotions. And they did all this during the crucial month before our major gospel brunch fundraiser, which I had no control over. It still happened. It was still wonderful, which really pissed me off because I'm usually involved in that. So I found out I had a lot of control issues during this hospital stay.
You?
The world was still spinning on its axis. The earth was still spinning on its axis, too, when I came out of there, much to my dismay. But, boy, without this group of women, I don't know how I would have gotten through the events of the last few months and how my husband, they supported my husband and they supported my son and they were there for us. And what a powerful group of women, and kept us just surrounded in love and support and whatever they could do. And a lot of them are working and have jobs and families, and they just came out of the woodwork to offer their support and be there and do for us. And the fact that I could accept that was huge for me as well, and to let them do for me. It was very empowering for me to let them do for me. As you know, I'm not usually good at it.
Yeah, most of us caregivers have a difficult time being on the receiving end of
exactly.
things or even asking for it.
It was a big lesson. It was a big lesson, and one I'm really actually grateful to have experienced. So, but that's what the organization does in a nutshell, is be supportive and loving and caring, and whatever a woman needs, we're there in a totally confidential, safe, and supportive atmosphere. So I encourage women who are listening, if they think that they might be HIV positive and they're afraid to get tested, contact us either by telephone, 310-204-1046. Get a hold of us through the website. We have all the information where you can go and get confidential anonymous testing. If we don't have it physically in our office, we will find the answers for you and get the information to you.
Well, I also want to say that they can also offer donations, because it's an organization that is well worth supporting. So that's another reason to get in touch with Women at Risk. And Pam, I really want to thank you for taking the time tonight. I want to just acknowledge you that for all the giving and the doing that you do for so many other people, you know, you have a right to be on the receiving end. And what goes around comes around in terms of all the good stuff that you put out there comes back to you, and you're so deserving of it. And I really appreciate you being on the show tonight being the inspiration that you are to me and so many other people.
Thank you, Stuart. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, and we're going to do it again.
Great.
Okay.
Great.
Now, for those of you that are listening, there's something that kept jumping out at me all evening as Pam was talking. And the phrase just kept coming to me, stay involved to stay alive. If you heard what Pam was saying, you know, she got involved with an organization. And if you heard, in spite of all of the trials and tribulations she's been through even recently, you heard how much laughter was in her voice and how much lightness was in her voice and how much energy was in her voice in spite of what she's been going through in very recent, not just the last 10 years or so. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that she knows that her life depends on her staying involved with life. staying involved with caregiving, with volunteering, with things that are important to her and things that have meaning and add to her and give her an opportunity to give back and get out of her own stuff periodically. And anybody in any recovery program will say the same thing to you, that part of the healing process is giving back. And so I really encourage any of you, this is, you know, basic metaphysical principle as well as just good common sense. Stay involved to stay alive. Get out there and contribute something to your community, and you'll be amazed at how it comes back to you. I want to thank Pam again. I want to thank all of you for listening. I want to thank you for the support that you give the show, and feel free to contact me through tellthetruthfaster.com, and hope you'll listen in and tell your friends about it, and we'll see you next week on Tell the Truth Faster. Thanks for listening. This is Stuart Altshuler. The rainbow up high in the land that I heard of once.